My special guest this morning, Robbie. Hello, Robbie. Nice to have you here.
Morning, Dave. Hello, everyone.
Been a long time, hasn't it? 41 years doing the Motoring with Robbie session?
Yes, since 1949.
Was it a sad day to hear that last broadcast on Saturday morning?
Are you asking me or are you telling me?
I'm asking you.
Yes, it was. It was sort of the end of an era. And it meant, of course, that an association is lost with the wonderful staff in radio. I met some wonderful people in Radio New Zealand.
A long association, of course, that has not gone unnoticed. We have a very special message for you this morning.
Hello, Robbie. This is Beverly Wakeham. And I don't know whether to say it gives me pleasure to talk to you at this occasion or to say that I'm really sorry that the 41-year reign of Robbie, the motorist's friend, has come to an end. It's an enviable record. I worked out this morning at something like just over 2,000 programs that you've prepared and presented for us over those years. Not to mention, I've got a vague memory that you did actually do the odd thing for Saturday Night at Home in past years. And of course, I remember more recently the marvellous nostalgia program you did in the then Tonight Show, which created a tremendous amount of interest on the part of our listeners. And I think that's been the essence of your career in broadcasting, Robbie, is being interested and being interested. And a combination of the two has made for some really riveting listening over the years. And I know, particularly with the Motoring Show, a lot of help to a lot of people from some very zany requests and simple requests to some really complex ones, and you've managed to handle them all with enormous aplomb and humanity and humour. It's been a marvellous record, Robbie. Thank you very much for all that you've contributed to public broadcasting in New Zealand. And may I take the opportunity on behalf of the board and my colleagues to wish you a very long and happy and productive retirement.
A lot of people would quite agree with what Beverly has to say there, and in fact everyone would. Yes, it has been a long association, 2,000-odd programmes that you prepared for Radio New Zealand. Where did it all start anyway, Robbie?
Well, it started in Gisborne. By the way, that was pretty good from Beverly Wakeham, and quite a surprise.
I bet it was. Sorry to throw that
I'll have to write her a letter, and I certainly will. Yes, I was a motor mechanic in the post office workshops in Gisborne, and in 1949 I transferred to the transport department, as it was then called, as a vehicle inspector.
Yeah, let's go back a bit further than that. Of course, you were employed with the post office in another role, message boy, first of all.
Yes.
And you didn't particularly like having to wear a collar and tie, so you got into where you could roll up your sleeves and do a bit of mechanical work.
Yes, they sent me down to the workshop with a bike that needed repairs to its brakes, and I didn't even know there was a workshop. They said, oh yes, there's one there. All right. And so off I went, and I liked the atmosphere down there. No collars and ties, as you say.
Were you interested in mechanical things at that time?
Not fearfully, no. But in the post office, they had been very good to me. I sort of got beyond the message boy stage, and they tried me in the telephone exchange, and they tried me in the mail room, and they tried me on the front counter, and money order, all sorts of places, to see what I wanted to do. If I wanted to stick with the post office.
Because in those days, of course, when you joined public service or a group like the post office, it was going to be for life, wasn't it?
Oh, you're there for 40 years, yes, yeah. Full stop. Anyway, I went out to the workshop, and I liked the atmosphere there, and so I asked if I could start there. I asked the chap in charge, the foreman, a chap named Gordon Cassie, if there was a vacancy. He said, yes, as a matter of fact, we do want an apprentice here. I'll see what I can do about it. And so I was transferred to the engineers department of the post office and became an apprentice mechanic. And then the war came along, and I went to the scrap for a few years.
You were in the Solomons, weren't you?
Yes, the Royal New Zealand Air Force. I was a radar mechanic, strangely enough.
What was the time like over there? How long did you spend in the Solomons, anyway?
3 years, I think it was, yes.
Based whereabouts in the Solomons?
Guadalcanal and New Georgia, remember?
Yeah. What was that time like?
Terrible. Terrible place. Gosh, you wouldn't want to go there for a holiday. Anyway.
Just the atmosphere. I know you came back and you're a bit disillusioned, weren't you? I've read somewhere that when you came
couldn't
back.
Couldn't settle
here,
down.
Very unsettled.
Yes.
What caused that unsettling period? Was it the war or what was it?
I think so, yes. Just the war. I'd seen something different. Some of it I liked, some of it I didn't like. And I felt I needed a change. I could also see that there wasn't a great deal of future for me in the workshop. I'd finish up as a motor mechanic at the bench, probably, at the very best, a foreman, but I'd still be working under rotten conditions. Mechanics work under rotten conditions, you know. They're on concrete floor, and in the wintertime, the concrete sweats, and it's always wet, and everything you handle, all the tools are all cold. And,
you get the grease, of course, and grain into your hands.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And so I thought, I've got to get out of here. and the Transport Department advertised for vehicle inspectors. And
what qualifications did you have to have for that?
A-grade mechanic.
And you were an A-grade mechanic at the time?
Mm. Yes, but that's all. So, okay, I started there in 1949, and in that same year, I'd always been a radio fan, you see. All my spare time spent listening to the radio. So one day I thought I'd go up the stairs and have a look, see what made the local radio station tick. And the chap in charge, he showed me around, and I asked him about staff because there didn't seem to be anybody much around. And he explained that the station employed people on contract work, contractees, and they were paid, you know, on a part-time basis doing the announcing. And he asked me if I'd be interested in having a go. And I said, yes, all right. So he organised an audition test. He went into another room and listened to an extension speaker, and he'd given me things to read. And so that went on for about 10 minutes. And when he came out of the room, I could see by the look on his face that he wasn't too impressed. And I said, how did that go? And he said, well, fair to lousy, but I think there's hope for you. And if you'd care to come in at night, I'll teach you microphone technique, teach you announcing. So I did that, and while episodes of The Japanese Houseboy and Dad and Dave from Snake Gully and Eb and Zeb and Black Moth and so on were playing, he taught me announcing and microphone technique. And then he let me go on air all by myself.
Can you remember that first time going on air?
Yes, I was terrified. Yes.
<Yeah.
laughs> I had a technician. He played the records for me.
A bit different from what it's like now.
Yes, yes. I was looking at you there working away before we went on air, before I came on air. It's a real one-man band now.
Tis indeed. Tis indeed. But radio in those days had a great appeal, didn't it? I mean, there wasn't television, really, I mean, in those days. And everybody seemed to be tuned to their radio sets at night, didn't they?
Yes, yes.
But more of an appeal then, I guess, than it does now.
Yes. Yes, well, there was nothing else to do, either that or read. The television has made all the difference to nighttime radio, there's no doubt about that.
It's got a lot to answer for in a whole wide range of things, isn't
it? Yes, oh yes, yes, too
right. So, okay, you learned how to go on there and you did your first air shift. And where did you progress from then? I mean, when was it the start of motoring with Robbie? I mean, that must have been around about that time.
Yes, it was.
Who had the idea for it?
Well, when I started with the station, it was not a commercial station. It was like a national station, really. There was no commercials at all, but then it went commercial. They changed the call sign from 2ZJ to 2XG, and a local garage proprietor asked about a motoring program and if the station had a fellow on the staff that could do a motoring program, and they said, yes, well, we've got just the bloke here. So they asked me if I would do it, and I agreed. They said, well, do you think you could keep it going for a year? And I said, oh, yes, I thought I could. Well, they said, what about 5 years? We've got to look to the future, you know. Yes. Oh, 5 years? No, I don't think so. Yeah, I don't know. Let's see. And so it went on and on and on until 1957, when I moved to Napier. In between times, other stations had picked it up, and I've got the advertising salesmen to thank for that. As they moved around the country, they advised various garages that there was a motoring program in existence and would they like to sponsor it. So New Plymouth was the first one to take it, and then Tauranga, and then Masterton, and then Hamilton, and Whangarei, and Invercargill, and I got lost after that. I can't remember them all. There were 24 altogether in the finish.
Just the name, Motoring with Robbie. Robbie, who, of course, last Saturday morning broadcast the final program, Motoring with Robbie. Of course, a program that is well known throughout the whole of New Zealand. I believe it will be most probably mentioned on television. The Holmes program have gotten a bit of interest in it, haven't they?
Yes, yes, they asked for a copy of the last program.
It would have been a bit different having a camera pointing at you rather than a microphone, Robbie.
Yes, yes, I suppose so. Although I will not appear on TV1, but I will appear on TV3. The TV3 people spent a couple of hours at the house the day before yesterday. I'm not sure at this stage when that will be screened. There was some confusion over the presentation date. And it was to have been on last night, but they rang fairly early in the evening and said, no, there'd been a muck-up over the scheduling date. They'd ring me and let me know when it would be presented. It'll be in the 6:30 news. Although they were there for 2 hours, I'll probably be on screen for about 2 seconds.
That's television, though, isn't it?
Yep.
Robbie, your name, of course, is, not many people might know this, but it's Powell Montague Robinson.
Yes.
What a mouthful.
Yes. Well, my father was a Londoner, you see, and Robinson in London, pretty common name, thousands of them. And he decided that if he ever had a son, he wouldn't be just ordinary Tom Robinson or Bill Robinson or George Robinson. So he did have a son. He married an Australian. My mother was an Aussie, and he named me Powell Montague. Powell after Baden Powell, you know, the Chief Scout, and Montague because Montague Norman was the manager of the Bank of England. No relation, unfortunately. But that's how I got my name.
A name like that, did it cause you any difficulty when you were at school?
Yes, it did. And even after that, people couldn't spell it, and some of them, you know, couldn't pronounce it, and I got Powell and Paul.
So what did your parents call you?
Powell.
Okay. Yeah. Later on, you got nicknamed Monty.
Yes. That was when I started in the post office as a message boy. I met the postmaster in the private box lobby. He stopped me and he said, "Hey, you're new here, aren't you?" I said, "Yes, sir." His name was George Nelson. He said, "What's your name?" "Robinson, sir." "Well, what's your first name?" "Powell." "Oh, yes. Have you got a second name?" "Yes." "What's that?" "Montague." "Powell Montague," he said. "Oh, God. We'll have to do something about that. We'll call you Monty." And so it stuck. And when I started broadcasting, they talked about a motoring program. Well, what are we going to call this thing? And motoring with Powell didn't sound right, and motoring with Monty sounded a bit corny. And somebody suggested, well, why not motoring with Robbie? And so it stuck.
Simple as that, eh? Everyone knows you as Robbie now. And the format for your program, too, Motoring with Robbie Session, is one that is endured, hasn't it? How do you start your program?
I used to start with the sound effect of a car arriving.
That's right. That was early on, wasn't it?
The car would stop and the door would open and slam and then good morning, everybody. And then at the end of the program, it used to run for 13 minutes. The door would slam again. The safety belt would click. The engine would start.
The safety belt clicking, though, that came in at a later date.
Yes, that was put in afterwards. That's right.
When safety belts became compulsory and when everybody was putting safety belts in their car.
Yep.
But the format itself, you know, starting off with good morning, listeners, and welcome to this week's motoring session. And then you went on and you gave some advice. And then there were the letters. You answered the letters.
Yes.
And then finally, of course, the story. And has it always remained that way?
Yes.
Was that something that you consciously formulated or was that something that maybe you were advised on?
No, it was something that I did myself, but from time to time, Radio New Zealand, as they changed names from the National Broadcasting Service to NZBC to Radio New Zealand, they asked if I could change the format, and I said, yes, by all means, have you got any ideas? But nobody could suggest a better format, so it stuck at the original, except that it was pruned down to 6 or 6.5 minutes. And I think it's a good idea. I reckon that to expect an audience to listen to the one voice for 13 or 14 minutes is asking too much.
When you came to Hawke's Bay 1957, you didn't immediately start your motoring session here.
No.
So there's a story behind that.
Yes, I was recording it in Gisborne for the other stations, as I told you, about 5 or 6 of them. So when I came here, I called on the station manager and asked him, you know, if it would be all right if I could continue recording the programs from Napier Studios. Ken Collins it was. He and Roland Levin, the program organiser, they called them then, the program director now, he and Roland Levin were sitting there having a cup of tea. So they said, yes, that'll be all right, just make your arrangement with them over there, see Jim Grant, the supervising technician, he'll fix it up. And I said, well, by the way, you've just opened a station here, the 2ZC. We now call it Bay City Radio. It's a commercial station, yes. Well, perhaps you'd like to broadcast the motoring session, and I wouldn't mind doing it for you, for the Hawke's Bay listeners. They smiled and said, oh, well, Mr. Robinson, that's all taken care of, thank you. We have somebody that will be doing it, and he'll be doing the first program on Saturday this week. Oh, I said, I'll listen with more than passing interest. Anyway, if anything untoward should happen, you can get in touch with me by ringing the Ministry of Transport. And they smiled benevolently and said, yes, all right, Mr. Robinson, we'll do that. It was a case of, you know, don't call us, we'll call you job. And so I left them. And would you believe it, Dave, this chap that they got to do the program, broadcast his first program Saturday morning and died in the afternoon. Needless to say, the phone was ringing first thing on Monday morning. So I took over from somebody, I stepped into a dead man's shoes, and I had to be very careful. I felt so sorry for his wife and family, and I was very careful in choosing the right words when I presented the first programme in her stead.
You would have had to.
Yep.
We're talking about 41 years of the motoring session. I guess you could say the longest running non-stop programme on commercial radio anyway. It's a New Zealand record. It most probably could be even a world record. I don't know. You've been associated with Stuart Greer Motors. They've been the sponsor of your program for many years now, haven't they?
Yes, 21 years. They've been good sponsors too. They've never, ever interfered. They've never criticised. They've been jolly good.
That's a long association. That must be just about a record too, with one particular program, the sponsorship.
When I first came to Napier, Holt Hardware, they sponsored it, but it didn't last long, about 6 months, and then it changed to Deluxe Car Sales over in Hastings, and they sponsored it for several years, and then the sponsorship changed to Stuart Greer.
Well, Stuart Greer Motors, a family firm in Hawke's Bay, and a long association with you. The program itself, I mean, when you started broadcasting the program, who did you have in mind was going to benefit from it?
The do-it-yourselfer, the amateur, and also the person who just didn't know a thing about motor cars. I would read these handbooks, you know, that came with the car, the ones that came in the glove locker, and they were so badly written, obviously not written by journalists or anybody with any flair for writing, and there's a whole lot of gobbledygook in them, and they would use terms and words that people wouldn't understand. So I thought, I could broadcast some of this information, and I would rewrite it and put it into plain man's language. For instance, you know, they would refer to the differential. Well, a lot of people wouldn't even know where the differential was in the car. They wouldn't know it was in the back or the front or what. And so I sort of systematically went through the handbook and picked out little bits here and there and gave simple explanations, but not so simple that, I mean, they're not fools out there, all these people, and I didn't want to make it sound, you know, too simple, too childish.
In those days, did more people do their own work on cars than they do now?
Yes, they did, and it was all right. I mean, they couldn't come to a great deal of harm, not really. You know, they're quite simple, really, especially the American cars.
Was there a time, though, that you'd say, hey, don't do it yourself, take it to a mechanic?
That time is now. Since the arrival of the Japanese cars on the New Zealand market, that's put an end to the do-it-yourselfers. Except that there's still a lot of Morris Minors and Morris 8s and Ford Anglias and so on around.
Not as many as they used to be, eh?
No, they're fast fading away. But the modern car is very, very sophisticated, and the technology is really quite wonderful. Sometimes to the point of being a little bit confusing. I don't know whether you caught an item in the Daily Telegraph a few weeks ago in their column, the Telegraphics. A certain elderly Napier couple recently decided to trade in their 1950 model car and take a step into the 1990s, you know, a new model complete with a stereo that was supposed to do all sorts of amazing things. But they were a bit disappointed when it wouldn't even accept the cassette tapes, let alone play them. So back they went to the dealer, and he fixed the trouble in no time at all, in a couple of seconds. It seems that although the elderly couple had swatted up on what happened when they pressed the various buttons and things, they hadn't swatted up on where to actually put the cassette tape. However, they're now well aware that cassette tapes don't work when they put in the ashtray. Well, yeah, that's very true. We've got a 1989 car. We bought it last year, and it's got a fairly sophisticated radio in it.
Stereo system.
Stereo system.
Four speakers, the whole works, eh?
Yes, and unless you use the thing every day, you know, you can forget how to work the thing.
Absolutely. Of course, many thousands of people right throughout New Zealand have been tuning into you over the years, not only for your motoring program, Robbie, but also for the other programs, which we'll talk about very shortly. Did you always get a lot of letters?
Yes, average about 5 a week. Of course, they came from all over New Zealand. They were not only Hawke's Bay listeners writing, or perhaps I might only get one letter a week from a Hawke's Bay listener. But I used to tell the listeners occasionally to write to the station that they are listening to. And of course, if it was 1ZB Auckland, well, 1ZB would simply put them back in the mail address to Box 241 Napier. That's basically radio's number. And I'd get them here.
Did you ever get letters that you really couldn't answer?
Yes, occasionally.
What did you do about them?
Well, I would go directly to the service manager of the garage. For instance, if it was a Honda, I'd go to Stuart Greer's and see the service manager and say, hey, look at this, here's a sticky one, what do you reckon about this? Well, of course, you know, he gets the bulletins and all the guff from Japan and the one jump ahead of me, and he would come to light with the answer. It might have been Ford, perhaps. Well, I'd go around to Crichton Ford here and see the service manager and say the same thing to him. I didn't have to do it very often. I was a bit like a lawyer, I suppose. I remember asking a lawyer, my legal advisor, you know, how he could manage to sort out different people's problems. Every time somebody walked in the door, they had a different problem. And he said, oh, well, I simply do what you probably do. He said, I apply basics. Well, cars are cars, and if it's got a knock in the engine, whether it be a Ford or a Honda or a Mitsubishi, whatever, it's probably a piston, or it could be a bearing knock or whatever, depending on the conditions.
Were there any real strange ones, strange letters that you got, unusual problems, very trivial, maybe funny problems?
Yes, there was one bloke, I think he was a Taramanui or a Thai Happy listener, and he had a Bradford. And he did say that he had lost the dipstick and he had fashioned one of his own. And after he'd fitted it to the engine, this is the engine oil dipstick, after he'd fitted it to the engine, there was a funny clicking noise that was worrying him. And, you know, what could this be? And I thought it was inconceivable that he hadn't put two and two together and thought, now, what have I done? Oh, I've made a dipstick. Now, the click wasn't there before I fitted the newly fashioned dipstick. It must be too long, which is what it was. But it intrigued me that somebody couldn't sort that sort of thing out for themselves and could be bothered sitting themselves down. He wasn't having me on, not at all. In fact, after it was broadcast, he wrote to me and said that he had listened with distaste to what I had to say, because I did joke about it.
You trivialised it a wee bit. Fair enough. He deserved that most probably, didn't he?
I suppose he did, yeah.
Apart from your radio program, you've written a lot of articles for newspapers. You've done a lot of test driving of vehicles. Is there any vehicle that really stands out as something special that you've test driven?
That's a fairly difficult one, Dave. I've always been a fan for the luxury cars. I've never owned one, not a real luxury car.
So what would you like to own?
I'd like a Honda Legend, or one of these Toyota Creditors, or crikey, a Mercedes-Benz, perhaps a Jaguar. But heck, with, you know, stuff like Jaguar, you're getting up to $169,000. I've got that sort of money. But they're all lovely cars to drive, beautifully equipped.
Of course, you're well known for the nostalgia program that you did with Wayne Mard.
Mm.
You did that for, what, about 7 years, didn't you?
Yes. That was very successful. I got a lot of enjoyment out of that, really, you know, presenting the program. Some of our listeners possibly don't remember it, but you'll remember that he was in Wellington, and I was here in the Napier Studios, and we'd use the microwave link. It used to go through the automatic exchange and up the pole to that great big dish, you know, we've got here in Shakespeare Road, and out over the mountaintops to Wellington, and his would come back to me. And the quality of the transmission was so good that people thought that I went to Wellington every Thursday night and we were sitting in the same studio, but we weren't.
There was a definite knack, though. There's a talent in being able to do that, that talent you and Wayne had, because you did sound as if you were just talking to one another.
Yes.
And that's a little bit difficult, isn't it, when you can't see the person, Robbie?
Yes, it is rather. But I knew him because he worked here for some years and married a Hastings girl, Debbie, and he was good to work with. He had, you know, quite a bit of microphone experience. I made sure that when I was here, I would never ever answer the phone. There was somebody else in the building. There was a technician on duty, and he would answer the phone, but I wouldn't allow anything to interrupt my concentration.
I believe there was one time when your concentration was interrupted when we had a bit of an earthquake. Do you remember that?
I was actually speaking to Wayne at the time. I was sitting where you're sitting now, and the mic started jigging about. I thought, heck, you know, what's this? And then away she went. She was a real rock and roller. And I said to Wayne, hang on a minute, we're having an earthquake here. I don't know whether I'll have to evacuate or what, it's not getting any better. And the windows were rattling and clattering. Anyway, it went on for about a minute. I think it was fairly about 4 or 6.
Yeah. From all accounts, and I have this from the technician who was actually on at that particular stage, you became a whiter shade of pale, I believe.
Yes. Well, I went through the 1931 shake. I was in Gisborne then, And I don't fear earthquakes, but I have a lot of respect for them. I don't like them at all because, okay, they start gently and they get a little bit worse and a little bit worse, and you think, gosh, you know, is this going to get any worse or get better? Fortunately, that night it got better.
Over the years you've been doing the program, one of the things you've been talking about is road safety. You've been, I guess, waving that banner for, what, 41 years. Have you ever been involved in a serious accident yourself?
No, never. I imagine it's... Well, I know, you know, from people I've spoken to, met people who have had a bad accident, and it's a traumatic experience for them. It's something they never, ever get over. Never. If they get over it at all.
And yet the road toll, of course, at the moment is horrifying, shocking, isn't it? What do you think is the main cause of that road toll?
Booze, no doubt about it. I don't suggest that everybody is driving on the road drunk. And the real drunk, he's not the one that causes all the trouble. I mean, he's wandering all over the road and everybody gets out of his way, but it's the fellow that's had a few. Thinks he's pretty good. And, of course, he exceeds the speed limit, takes risks and does some dangerous overtaking and so on. But the Ministry of Transport have played this down for years and years and years, but I reckon 80%, the Ministry of Transport say 50%, but I reckon that 80% of the accidents are alcohol-related.
What about the booze bus? I mean, that's out on the roads now. Is that going to make a bit of difference coming down hard on drinking and driving?
I don't think so, no.
Do you think people now, though, are starting to... Is the message starting to sink in?
No. The road toll's getting worse. No, I don't think the message is getting in at all.
Sad part about it is we're heading towards Christmas, we're heading towards a long holiday period. A lot of people that we're talking to right now, people that maybe are listening, are not going to be around in the new year.
It's possible. But one good thing, I think, is the introduction by the booze people, is the low-alcohol booze, both spirits and beer. That's good.
Robbie, over the time that you've been broadcasting, has there been any particular highlight?
Yes, it was in 1986 when I went to Wellington, and Sir Paul Reeves, on behalf of Her Majesty, presented me with the QSM, the Queen's Service Medal. That was for service to the motoring public. Daily Telegraph set that up. They nominated me. But when anybody's nominated for an award, they are not nominated for a knighthood or anything like that. They're simply nominated for an award. And it goes to the Prime Minister's Department, and it's supported by letters of recommendation from four or five local prominent people. And a small cabinet committee decides, OK, we'll give him a knighthood. No, he won't. We'll give him an MBE or an OBE or a QSM or whatever. But, yes, that was the highlight of my career.
Of course, with Motoring with Robbie, you always finish off with a funny story. How did that all begin?
Oh, well, I thought, well, there's a lot of technical stuff in the program and probably quite a lot of people not particularly interested in cars, especially housewives, and they wouldn't be listening very intently, but they would listen to a story. Anybody will listen to a story. And so I plonked that in at the end. Broadcasting people didn't like the idea when I suggested it. You know, they conjured up thoughts of sexy stories and racial strife.
How difficult was it for you to find clean jokes?
Sometimes it took me longer to find a suitable joke than it did to prepare the whole program.
So where did you get all your jokes from?
Got them from everywhere, all over the show. But there was a magazine, an American magazine, put out called The Excavating Engineer, and that had a page, the last page, called Not in the Contract. And, gee, some of those were funny. The Ministry Works used to take it. It was a monthly magazine, and they let me tear out the back page. And I used to use those. And, oh, heck, there'd be about 10 to a page, I suppose.
Yeah. Get a lot of response from those funny stories?
Oh, yes, too, right. Meet people in the street, and as soon as they'd see me, they'd start doubling up with laughter. But sometimes I think, well, you know, what will I say anyway? And sometimes it was, you know, quite a corny joke that they thought so funny.
You got one for us this morning, Robbie?
Yes. It's an Aussie joke. It's about an American firm that was drilling for oil in the outback. The Yanks had all the top jobs on the project, but there were a few Aussies employed there as labourers, you see. And one of the Aussies, he was working on the rig, and he accidentally dropped a hammer down the shaft. And any further drilling was quite impossible until the hammer was removed, and a lot of time and effort and money went into getting this blessed thing out of the shaft. And when the shaft was eventually cleared, the boss called all the workers to a meeting and he ceremoniously presented the guilty Aussie with a hammer. He said, "I'd like you to accept this as a memento of your time here. every time you look at it, it'll remind you of the trouble and expense you've caused through your stupid carelessness. And it will also remind you of what a good job you've lost through your own idiotic stupidity. And the Aussie labourer accepted the hammer. He said, "Does this mean I've got the sack? Does this mean I've got fired?" And the boss said, "Too right you are." And the Aussie said, "Well, this thing's no bloody use to me anymore." And he tossed the hammer back down the shaft.
Robbie, why did you decide to retire from the program?
Well, really and truly because the modern car has become so technically wonderful. It's reached the stage where it's beyond the ability of the average do-it-yourselfer or the average amateur to repair. Got to take it to the garage.
Robbie, what are you going to do in your retirement?
I don't know.
Well, I mean, you've retired twice. This is another time, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Nolan, what are you going to do?
I haven't got anything in particular lined up, Dave. Not really.
Take it easy.
Do a bit of reading, I suppose.
Good on you. Look, it's been a pleasure talking to you once again. And have a very Merry Christmas to you and Nolan.
Thank you very much.